Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. On Tuesday, March the 25th, coming up, we hear how the pandemic has affected young people in Kent 5 years on. The son of former Gillingham boss Justin Edinburgh, who died from a cardiac arrest, encourages us all to learn CPR. And a centre built for five lions rescued from war-torn Ukraine has officially opened in Kent. But first up today, a drug driver who crashed into another vehicle near Ramsgate, leaving a man with life-changing injuries, has been sent to prison. Well, Kate joins me on the podcast with more on this top story. Kate, where did it happen?
Well, it happened on the A256 Richborough Way in August of 2022. Clayton Lawton was at the wheel of an Audi Q7 when he undertook an HGV before cutting back in and pulling out onto the 7-score roundabout without stopping to give way. He then collided with the passenger side of a Renault van, which was already on the roundabout, sending it airborne. Now, when police arrived on the scene, Lawton was said to have smelled heavily of drink, with glazed eyes and slurred speech. He was also unsteady on his feet. A blood test later revealed he was twice the drug driving limit, and there was a breakdown product of cocaine in his system, as well as evidence of a combined use of Class A drugs and alcohol.
And what did the victim say about the injuries he'd suffered?
Well, emergency services say the immediate aftermath was so serious, a paramedic had to climb through a window of Robert Crudace's vehicle to make sure he didn't choke. He was airlifted to King's College Hospital in London when he was put into a medically induced coma, having suffered a traumatic brain injury as well as two spinal fractures and a misaligned rib. The lecturer spent 18 days in hospital, and almost 3 years later, he says he still suffers ongoing problems, including anxiety, PTSD, fatigue, as well as mobility, speech and vision issues. He says his brain is slower than it was before, and he has difficulty attending social gatherings.
Finally, Kate, can you tell us the full details of the sentence handed down?
So, 29-year-old Clayton, who lives in Fort Crescent in Margate, originally pleaded not guilty before admitting the offences a few months later. The judge revealed the Crown Prosecution Service had decided not to prosecute him for the offences of drink driving and drug driving, so the soon-to-be dad of three could only be punished for his dangerous driving and its consequences, not for any potential intoxication or impairment. He's been sentenced to 2 years and 2 months behind bars and is also subject to a 37-month driving ban.
Kate, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today. An Abroadstairs woman has appeared in court accused of trying to murder her daughter. Police were called to a bungalow in Guy Close last Thursday night, and a 28-year-old was taken to a London hospital with serious stab wounds. Carla Lovejoy, who's 53 and from the same road, has been remanded in custody and is due to enter a plea next month. Three men have been found guilty of plotting to kill a former cage fighter who was involved in Britain's biggest cash robbery in Tunbridge. Paul Allen was convicted in 2009 for his part in the £54 million Securitas raid. He was paralysed after shots were fired at his home in northeast London in 2019. The men are due to be sentenced at a later date. A man's been charged after police found 50 bags of cocaine in a hotel room in Tunbridge Wells. The suspect was seen in an alleyway near the town centre earlier this month, and officers found a key card during a search. The 24-year-old's been remanded in custody ahead of a hearing next month. Police investigating reports of a person exposing themselves near Paddock Wood have released a picture of a man they want to question. Officers were called to a footpath by the River Medway near Banbridges Road in East Peckham last Wednesday. We've shared the image on our socials. Now, nearly 400 jobs at Morrison's are at risk after they announced closures, including two in Kent. The Daily Store in Tunbridge is set to go, along with the Market Kitchen facility at the store in Gravesend. Across the country, the supermarket's planning to get rid of dozens of cafes, meat and fish counters, florists and some pharmacies. Sky's business presenter Darren McCaffrey says it all comes down to money.
Morrison's are saying that they're just not making the amount of money on these cafes, the meat counters, the florists, the fishmongers, as they have done in the past.
Kent Online reports.
Around 3,000 homes in West Kent were still without water at the time of recording today's podcast after a burst pipe at a South East Water Treatment Centre. Now, the company has apologised to those in areas around Kingshill, Yalding and Wateringbury who still don't have supplies or low pressure. They're expecting services to return to normal today. A Kent family say they're heartbroken after their nan's gravestone was stolen for the second time in 5 months. Beryl leader's memorial plaque was first taken from Gravesend and Milton Cemetery last November. The replacement was stolen earlier this month. The family say anyone with information is urged to contact police or the cemetery. Next today, the Kent Online podcast has been told a programme to try and stamp out underage vaping in a part of Kent is already showing signs of working. The local vape action pilot launched in Tunbridge Wells last September. Trading Standards have been visiting shops to make sure they're not selling to children. Some illegal vapes have also been seized. Well, James Widdett is an operations manager at Trading Standards.
It's really promising. It's the first one in the country, so that's great that we've been able to support that locally. We're looking to maybe have a second area within the county where we can actually expand it to, because we can see the benefits. By trying to stamp out underage sales of vapes in an area and everybody coming to the same place to get their information, the same area for support, it makes that theme much, much stronger. So we're seeing benefits. We've been able to engage with schools on large levels, people on the high street, and I believe the survey was saying, I think it was something like 84% of residents in the area thought it was a really good idea and were supportive of it. So if we can get consumer buy-in, retailer buy-in, it's good for the whole area.
Because this is a pilot, this is the first one of its kind.
Yes.
Is there anything that you've really learned from doing it? Is there anything that you're going to take forward that you didn't really expect, didn't really realise when this pilot started out?
It's hard because we've had a team who've been going out dealing with retailers. I suppose some of the frustration is for the small independent retailers is the breadth of the product and how quickly it changes and evolves. So if we can support them, I think that's one of the key messages that's coming out of this. If we can engage with retailers and they're happy to engage and work with us, there is a really good beneficial support there. It removes illegal vapes from the product, from the marketplace, and also we reduce the risk of children obtaining vapes. Every time we go in and have a conversation with a retailer, we are reducing that risk, which is beneficial.
Because you mentioned going forward the pilot that you're thinking about another area of Kent. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular areas? Obviously, Tunbridge Wells is very different from other parts of the county. It's such a diverse area from North Kent and coastal communities to these more rural parts of the county. What sort of area are you looking at when you think this new pilot, of the next step of the pilot scheme, and where you're going to be enforcing this new local vape action plan elsewhere?
I'm not going to disclose where it's going to be. We're in conversations with people at the moment. But again, you're right. With a different area, you've got different issues. So Tunbridge Wells was good. It was a nice area to start something with. There are other places that will have different links to closer villages, towns, which would give us different issues to try and contend with. So one thing that we've learnt from the work with the alcohol work that we do is each local arrangement is local. So we would obviously be looking for somewhere where there is a drive from within the community and also a local authority that's prepared to work with us to move that forward and to work with the LVA, because you know there are some tools that will be available to them to support them as we move forward on this journey.
I suppose people will be curious when we'll learn when the next step of this pilot is going to be happening. When can we expect the name of the place and the pilot to be disclosed?
I think that's going to be happening soon. I mean, obviously, Tunbridge Wells have just had theirs and we've had the evaluation, which is really good. But we also need to carry on that work. This isn't, you know, 3 or 4 months and you fix the problem. This is about building relationships and building that work moving forward. And if you go, one thing we do know, if you go in and spend only a couple of months and then walk away, people then slowly go back to what they used to do. We need to change behaviour and we need to embed that change. So we'll be still working with Tunbridge Wells and the LVA there, and then we'll be looking at a further, or a second one to begin with, elsewhere in the county. But as soon as we know when that's going to be announced, we'll let you know.
James there was speaking to Oliver Leader-Desacks from our colleagues at KMTV.
Kent Online reports.
Residents of a seafront apartment block in Hythe are being evicted so the site can be turned into luxury homes. Tenants living in Pensand House in South Road have been told they must be out by April the 23rd so developers can move in. It's left some feeling anxious about finding somewhere else to live. The council say they'll help where they can. Proposals have been put forward, meantime, for 120 new homes in a village in Tunbridge Wells. The plans for the redevelopment of Bassett's Farm in Horsmonden include 48 affordable homes and set aside land for a medical centre. But residents have described the scheme as excessive and unsustainable. And plans for two HMOs in Dover have been given the green light. The properties in Castle Hill Road and Castle Street were approved, despite fears it'll lead to an increase in antisocial behaviour, noise and litter. It means Dover now has 66 HMOs, which are home to around 600 people. Next up today, a Kent psychologist says young people are still struggling with the impact of the pandemic, 5 years on from the very first lockdown. A new study has found more than a third of 18 to 25-year-olds have seen their mental health worsen since COVID. Clinical Partners, which provides talking therapy, says it's affecting their confidence and careers. Dr. Andrea Pickering works with young people in Tunbridge Wells.
We commissioned this piece of research to look at the experience of young people between the ages of 18 and 25 following the COVID pandemic. And we estimate over 2 million in the UK have experienced a decline in their mental health. And this is 5 years on. So there very much has been a mental health legacy to this COVID pandemic. And when we asked them about where this seemed to be showing itself, they talked about anxiety in professional settings. They had a sense of doubting themselves, questioning their skills. And they rooted this back to the fact that their group of young people had not completed the standardised examinations, so the GCSEs, A-levels or university examinations at the time. And they felt that employers questioned the validity of their qualifications. And this had an ongoing impact on their self-esteem and emotional resilience to life stressors. And also what they've described is having difficulties and missed opportunities in accessing work experience and mentorship in different roles because of lockdown and, you know, businesses having reduced productivity. There wasn't those openings for the younger generation to hop on, get onto the first rung of the ladder that other generations had had. So they felt very frustrated. The other side of it was social skills. So a third of young people found that their social life declined during the COVID pandemic and has continued to feel like they're disconnected from other people, and that's their peers, their friends, as well as family. So they developed this kind of more social withdrawn lifestyle, and it was their new normal during the pandemic, but they found it very difficult to return to normal afterwards. And they've also described developing what we would term as unhealthy coping strategies for their mental health. So one in five described smoking and vaping more, and one in 10 using alcohol to manage their mental health struggles.
How worrying is that, that people maybe aren't going to their GP or you know, reaching out for help in those kind of ways, but instead they're turning to substances to kind of get them through?
Absolutely, because we know that mental health problems like anxiety and depression are treatable with talking therapies like cognitive behavioural therapy or counselling. They are able to overcome these difficulties. So it's really challenging to see that one in six in our research had access to talking therapies. That was five out of six hadn't. And when we asked them why they hadn't, they described long waiting lists, uncertainty about how they would access any form of support, and then also this sense of judgment and stigma around having a mental health problem. So all of those three seem to hold them back from accessing support in a timely manner.
Kent Online News.
A 4,000-kilometre relay visiting all 72 Football League clubs gets underway today, encouraging all of us to learn CPR. It's happening over the next 28 days and we'll visit Gillingham's Priestfield Stadium on April the 12th. Now, Charlie Edinburgh is the son of former Jules manager Justin, who very sadly died after suffering a cardiac arrest almost 6 years ago. Charlie now runs a foundation in his dad's name, and I've been chatting to him.
He's vital. It's crucial that as many people have access to this life-saving skill. It's everything that, you know, we keep banging the drum with regards to the charity that we've set up in dad's memory. And just obviously going about and doing and delivering this work, you see just how many people have never had the opportunity to learn CPR. And as we know firsthand in regards to my dad, that could have been crucial in him still being here with us today. So, look, I think it's a fantastic campaign, a great initiative that, you know, British Heart Foundation and Sky Bet have come together to deliver across all the Football League clubs. And I'm sure and I'm hopeful that a lot of people will support and get behind it, because as we know firsthand, this could truly save a loved one's life.
Before what happened to your dad, Charlie, had you learnt CPR? Did you know what you would have to do if you were faced with that sort of emergency?
Not at all. I was very naive, like a lot of people, unfortunately, in this country. I think you've only got to look at statistics from some sort of other countries around the world. Norway, for example, they're reporting quadruples our survival rates, and that's just down to the fact they're teaching this in schools. People have the skill set once they're sort of moving on with their adult life. And look, yeah, I was naive. A lot of us are naive, and that just boils down to a lack of awareness and lack of education, unfortunately. So, you know, if the J3 Foundation, along with other fantastic charities that are working in this space, can continue to drive that message and get people learning the skills, you can only hope in the future that there's going to be a better survival rate in this country and more lives saved in the face of cardiac arrest.
And tell us a bit about some of the work that you are doing with the foundation, because I see you on socials quite regularly. Tell us how it's all going.
As you just mentioned earlier there, I can't quite believe we'll be approaching the 6 year mark in June. Time does fly. Some moments you can feel like it was 5 minutes, other times it seems like an eternity. But we're really proud of the work that we've been able to deliver and implement. Donations of defibrillators, CPR and defibrillator workshops up and down the country has enabled us to help save two people's lives. And, you know, that does dad's legacy the world of good. I think when we started this, we said if we could save one person's life, we know firsthand, that's why we set this up. The pain and the grief that we experienced as a family, we wanted to make sure no other family had to endure. And the fact that we've been able to do that for two people, their families and their friendship groups, you know, fills us with such an immense sense of pride and just encourages you and spurs you on to want to save more and help contribute to that. So, look, it's fantastic. We're still some way off with our campaign that we're looking to implement that mandatory requirement for defibs in all UK health and sports facilities. But, you know, we've had some fantastic conversations and just encouraging people to continue to support that, help us drive that and, continue saving lives in dad's memory.
What do you need to do to get those rules changed? Is it something that you need to put through law? How are you going to go about doing it?
Yeah, it's a case of obviously making sure that all of the boxes are ticked from a legal perspective, obviously pushing that campaign. I mean, we've got our change.org petition that we need to obviously encourage as many signatures as we can. If you can get to 100,000 signatures, that starts a conversation in Parliament. It needs to be had. But look, we just need to continue to get, you know, local MPs, people on board and seeing the work that we're implementing and the difference that it can make. We know firsthand, had there been a defibrillator on site in that gym where my dad was on that day, the chances are he could still be here with us. That's not for certain, but it would have given him a much significant chance of surviving. Just because of a cost that's attached to them is the reason they're not out there. That's not good enough. You can't put a price on a life. And I know that firsthand. I would pay any amount of money to have my dad still here with me. So, just continuing to make noise, continue to bang that drum and just make people realise that the significant difference that these pieces of equipment can make. you know, the football club meant an awful lot to my dad, and I would encourage as many people to get involved in the campaign and the initiative, if not for them, but in memory of dad. And you know, it would be a fantastic way to come together, remember him, but also to learn an invaluable life skill. So I encourage as many of you to do that, and thank you all for the support that you've shown me and my family. And yeah, hopefully it won't be too long until I'm back down at Priestfields and cheering on the Gills.
Thanks so much to Charlie for chatting to me for the podcast. You can find more information about the foundation set up in Justin's name. Just search for JE3 Foundation. We're all being encouraged to donate 15 minutes of our time to learn the life-saving skill.
Kent Online reports.
A new leisure centre in Tunbridge could be built on a car park near the existing building that's due to be demolished. A report suggests the facility goes on the site of the Sovereign Way Mid car park near the Angel Centre. It's going to be discussed by councillors next week. They say they're already in talks with the local farmers market that uses that area. A couple from Cox Heath, who'd both been widowed, have found love again at the age of 90. Sheila and Timothy Harris first met 6 years ago after being introduced by their daughters. They were married last week at St Nicholas Church in Linton in front of family and friends. You can read their full heartwarming story by heading to the website today. This has got loads of you talking. A mysterious spiral has been spotted in the skies over Kent. It left many residents starstruck last night as it was seen over places like Canterbury, Hythe and Tunbridge Wells. It's thought to have been caused by debris from the launch of a SpaceX rocket. If you missed it, you can head to the website to see pictures. And finally today, a rescue centre for five lions rescued from war-torn Ukraine has officially opened in Kent. Rory, Amani, Lyra, Vanda and Una are settling into the Big Cat Sanctuary in Smarden near Ashford. It's after campaigners raised £500,000 to build enclosures specifically designed for them. Well, Cam Whitnell is MD there.
We stumbled across a video in January 2024, so over a year ago now, of Una. It was a video that I4 posted. She was suffering from shell shock and concussions from debris that fell through bombings from Ukraine, Russia into Ukraine. And from there, obviously, we wanted to help. And it went from rescuing one lion, Una, to another four. And it's been a huge team effort. I mean, we've had partnerships with incredible zoos and sanctuaries and transport companies, NGOs, and obviously people around the world. And I say around the world because we've had people from Australia, North America, South America, Japan, all over donate, raise awareness for these five lions. And obviously we're at the end of the road now. Today we open it to the world.
Yeah, everyone was so incredibly generous and you were able to build the enclosure. Describe it for us. What's it like?
Yeah, I'd probably say it's arguably one of, if not the best lion facility in the UK for these lions. It's made up of four beautiful spaces, which are all specifically designed to suit their needs. Obviously, they need to recover, they need to heal, and we're going to get them on the right path and hopefully progress them really quick. They're already showing great signs and they're settling really well here in Kent. But yeah, it's a beautiful space and we're just really happy with how it's turned out.
You mentioned there about them needing to recover. Obviously, it's been a very traumatic experience for them over in Ukraine, but I'm sure making a very long journey as well will have an impact. What sort of things or characteristics do you need to look out for in them?
When you look at little Vanda, she was rescued from a flat in Ukraine. She was malnourished, underdeveloped, had parasites, suffering from rickets. She'd never been outside before or seen sunlight. So when they first originally discovered her, they thought she was only 4 months because she was so small, but she was actually 8 months. So we're just going to have to be working quite closely with her. She's very habituated because she was kept as a family pet. And then you've got Una. She was struggling with neurological issues, struggling to walk, shell shock, concussion. So we've got a lot of work to do with her, but she's already shown incredible progress since her first steps on grass, which was here at the sanctuary in August last year. And then you've got Rory, again, similar to Una, but not as bad, but coordination issues, neurological issues. You know, he didn't have the right diet, the right nutrients. So the back of his legs haven't formed fully and intact. But, you know, he's doing really well. He really is the king of Kent. And then you have sisters Amani and Lyra, and they're probably the best out of the five in terms of their health. But they've got a beautiful relationship, these sisters. They're very sweet. They're stuck to the hip.
And obviously, Cam, this has been a huge task for all of you guys. As you say, everyone's clubbed together. How has it been over the past, well, over a year now, as you say, for all of you waiting for this moment?
Oh, yeah, emotions ran high when they arrived a week and a half ago. I think most of us probably broke down in tears. It was just a huge sigh of relief. A year in the making, blood, sweat, and tears to get to this point to finally welcome them here. And it was amazing. It's been a journey, not just for us, our team, but so many other people and organizations that have supported the mission and joined us along with this journey. And to see them outside on grass, I mean, that's what it's all about. That's why we did what we've done. And it's just lovely to see them here. It feels surreal. So it's an overwhelming feeling. But I'm just trying to, and we all are trying to just take it in and enjoy, especially today.
The centre was officially opened by celeb supporter Paul Hollywood.
Kent Online Sport.
Tennis first, and Kent's Emma Raducanu's through to the quarterfinals of the Miami Open. The 22-year-old from Orpington set up a last eight clash with Jessica Pegula after a straight sets victory over another American, Amanda Anisimova. She says she's happy with her focus so far in the tournament.
I think it was also important to kind of keep the balance of being aggressive, because if you just stay defensive the whole time, I got found out a couple of times, but I was happy with how I kind of took that on board and then kept going for my shots as well. And it's really difficult, but I'm happy with how I'm moving on these courts and feeling pretty good.
Emma's due back in action tomorrow. On to cricket, and Kent are going to host a four-day match between the England Lions and India A this summer. It's been confirmed they'll meet at the Spitfire Ground in Canterbury from May the 30th. And in football, Gillingham's Jaden Clark has apologised after a post on socials over the weekend got fans speculating. Supporters were left asking what was going on when both he and defender Shad Ogi shared pictures of themselves in Jules kits with sand clock emojis underneath. Neither have featured in games recently, and some thought they were suggesting there was going to be another change of manager. Well, Jaden has since responded, saying the emojis were meant to suggest patience and will be back soon. Glad we got that one cleared up. Thanks ever so much for listening. That's all from us for today, but don't forget you can follow us on socials. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. Now that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.